Clubhouse.
There is a lot of content in the world. Each year, we're inundated with thousands of hours of television, hundreds of new movies, and music every week. It can be overwhelming. How do you know what's worth your time and what you should just skip? Well, luckily, Pod Clubhouse is here to help.
Hi, my name's Mike, and this is Love It or Leave It. Tonight, we're talking about Outer Banks, the new series streaming on Netflix, just released on April 15th. Tonight, joining me to talk about Outer Banks, the sexiest new Pogues show on TV, is ATX Gossip's Danny Dudek. And so I'm watching this show's Kristen. How are you guys doing? Thanks so much for coming out and talking to us tonight.
Yay!
Thanks for having us.
Danny, I have to come up with a better intro for you because you do so many different things. I feel like every time I intro you, I give like a different thing that you do. I need to come up with a better, just one summation of who you are.
I'm totally fine with how you introduced me.
I just keep changing it up. I think the last time I called you a pop culture impresario, which is also pretty good. I don't know.
That's very good. That's excellent. Right? I think you should keep that.
Yeah, I'm totally down with that. We'll go with that.
All right. Note to edit. We're going to make sure I always call you the pop culture impresario. My God, guys, how are we killing time here in quarantine and self-isolation? How are you guys doing? Kristen, what's going on with you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to my day job.
Oh, so. You are essential. You are deemed essential?
Not in my interpretation of the executive order, but yes, I am essential.
Well, you can be an essential impresario.
See, sure.
Everyone can be an impresario today.
Perfect. Awesome. I love it.
How about you, Danny? How are you killing time during this self-imposed plague?
Well, I'm busier than ever, so it doesn't feel quite as A, boring, or B, fun, as it has been for maybe some other people that I follow on the gram and watch all the fabulous experiments and cooking things and new projects they're working on. I'm still writing like crazy, even more than before. There's so many people consuming so much online that it's just trying to pump out as much as I can and make it as interesting as I can to catch the attention. So yeah, and then in between, when I have some quote-unquote downtime, I'm watching TV.
Isn't that great? I mean, I feel like my list of shows to binge is super long, and I don't know that I'm doing an excellent job of getting through it. I find I keep watching the same things kind of over and over again. How are you guys? Are you guys actually making the best of your binge life, or no? Is your list of things not getting any shorter?
No, not shorter at all. I was having for like the first month a really hard time focusing on anything. So I was watching only things I had seen before. I was really having a hard time. And this is the first show that I watched from start to finish. The first new thing I watched from start to finish since this all started happening.
No Tiger King for you? No, fucking Carol Baskin?
Okay,
no?
I did watch Tiger King. But that's not as much of a narrative, so it didn't feel as demanding of my full attention.
I mean, when we get down to it, it is really hard to put into words exactly what Tiger King really
it's
is.
It's so much.
other than just a clusterfuck and incrimination of the worst parts of this country. Beyond
Correct.
That, it is hard to say what it is. How about you, Danny? Are you making the best of your binge life in between being busy?
Yeah, that's pretty much, binge life is my life. I don't watch a lot of things I've watched in the past, even when I'm looking for something to not really have to pay attention to. For a while there, I was on this kick of watching Cheers. Did I watch those original episodes? Perhaps. If I did, I don't even really remember them. So that still is kind of a new show for me. I don't even know if I should share this information, but I'm currently watching Disney Channel shows before I go to bed because it helps me not be dragged down by all the drama of everything else that I watch.
That makes total sense to me. I think if we dragged in here 10 psychologists, they would all say yes.
Yeah,
yes,
for sure.
Definitely do that. Don't watch Tiger King. Don't
right
watch
before
the news.
Bed.
Yeah. Fucking go watch Big Time Rush or, you know, Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. You know, whatever you need to do.
Oh, I'm so glad I have your support.
What's the Disney show of choice?
Right now I'm watching Liv and Maddie.
That was the two sisters. One was the jock and one was like the pretty one.
She's a celebrity. Yes. So it makes sense that I would be drawn to that. But I actually am a little bit of a fangirl for Dove Cameron, who plays those leads. I've seen her in a couple of other things, and I've seen those Descendants movies. I think she's actually quite talented.
She's also so cute.
Yes.
So cute. An excellent singer. She actually has a great voice. She dropped a couple. She was doing some Marvel Avengers voiceover work.
Mm-hmm.
And she did the title theme for one of the shows. It was like an offshoot, like, or it was Spider-Man. It might have been Spider-Man. It was a Marvel property cartoon.
It's animated,
and she did like a series of.
Yeah, cool.
And she did some songs for it. It was great. Yeah, I love Dove Cameron. I'm a big fan of hers. I was a big fan of Liv and Maddie. So I haven't watched it recently, but yeah, for sure. And watching Disney shows totally makes sense. I've been binging Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I am on like my 11th rewatch of that, and I don't know why. It's not even my favorite Star Trek series, but
I know why, though. You're able to, you don't have to pay full attention to it. And that's what's nice about those shows that we've seen so many times, is like, you know what's going to happen, but you're not terribly invested in it because you know how it's going to end up. Like, I'm rewatching Parks and Rec right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. For sure.
Yeah, I feel like that. I mean, I watched, probably there was a good decade where I watched Friends every night for bed. I've seen all 10 years of Friends, probably not less than 20 or 30 times, like every episode of the series, just because there was so much of it. And it was great. It was so easy. It was comfort. It was the absolute best comfort food. And that was when times were good, you know, in these crazy ass times where it's hard to like quiet your brain, you know, insomnia is on the rise. You need some comfort food just to put your brain on autopilot, for sure.
Totally.
Let's talk about whether or not we can put our brains on autopilot when it comes to this show that we're talking about tonight. We are discussing Outer Banks. This is a brand new series on Netflix, as I said before. It dropped on April 15th. It's got 10 episodes. It was three co-creators, Shannon Burke and the brothers, Jonas Pate and Josh Pate. I assume they were brothers. I actually didn't actually look that up. I had never heard of any of them, though Jonas Pate actually has a pretty impressive executive producer IMDb, including Aquarius, which is a David Duchovny show from a couple years back.
That's also Sarah Gamble.
Not Sarah. Actually, it was before they were working together. It was actually just John McNamara.
Just John McNamara? Okay.
Yeah, I think she actually may have been like his protege kind of thing at that time.
Gotcha.
But
that
was his show. Yeah, it's actually still his, what do they call the top picture in Twitter? Not your profile picture, your like banner picture.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, Aquarius is still his banner picture, so it's a property he's very, very proud of. Yeah, so Aquarius is a fun show to binge if you ever have the chance. Anyway, yeah, Outer Banks is a really different kind of show for Netflix. I'm excited to talk to you guys about it. But before we get into that, Danny, I'm going to throw it to you. Can you give us a little recap of what this show is about?
Sure. So I call Outer Banks a soapy teen drama with mystery action adventure. That's a lot of stuff to get into one show, but they do it.
I mean, that's a dead on encapsulation.
If you 100%.
You only have six words to say it. That is dead on for sure.
So it's four teens that are kind of the main crux of this show. These four teens who live in the OBX. That's, you know, the hip way of saying the Outer Banks. Though this show is not shot in the Outer Banks, and we'll get into that a little bit later. So these four teens that call themselves part of the working class derelicts, and the nickname for that particular group of people is the Pogues. Guess we'll get into that later as well.
Pogues for life.
Yes, for sure. Pogues for life. So kind of the way that this area of the country is set up is you either have two jobs or you have two houses. So we're focused on the people that have the two jobs. The main guy's name is John B., and his dad has disappeared. And everyone's kind of written the dude off. He is convinced that his father is still alive. So in the midst of trying to convince his friends and figure out what happened to his father, they get embroiled in this treasure hunt. They find these clues for this treasure that's kind of like a Goonies tale of everyone in the city has known about this, that this ship sunk in the 1800s off the coast with $400 million worth of gold from the UK. And so they've decided they're going to find this. And of course, drama ensues. And here's my other little three lines. Struggles with the law, struggles with the rich kids, and struggles with themselves. That is the crux of the show. I think it's a little bit of OC, but shot quite a bit artsier, which I appreciate. The Wall Street Journal called it Dawson's Creek meets Goonies meets Outsiders. That's all very much accurate as well. But I'm going to go with the OC vibe. And also, guys, it's number 2 in the US today on Netflix. So people are watching.
It has exploded. It has been ranking high. And I like that Netflix is giving us the daily rankings in the user apps. It's a relatively recent thing that I'm enjoying just to see what other people are watching.
Mm-hmm.
But Outer Banks is... I can't think of another Netflix show like it. But there are a lot of shows, like you just named a couple, that... feel like it, but nothing ever from like a Netflix though. This feel I was describing it as like a CW show or maybe even like a UPN show with like a much higher budget, you know, like real production values, but with that same kind of angsty heart, you know, teen love vibe.
You said UPN and CW, and I was going to actually throw the WB in there, so we've got all three.
Because I think it is very merged, WB. Yeah. I think it is very WB.
But it's like WB at its heyday. So like right in the very peak Dawson's Creek when they did have money and they were wearing like really nice clothes and stuff. And it was like if, you know, Joey's alcoholic dad had told her that there was, you know, $400 million off the coast, help your sister's B&B or whatever. And then they all got together and were like doing that. That's exactly what it feels like to me.
And coincidentally, Dawson's Creek was shot near
in
the
Outer Banks.
So let's talk about that because the location plays a huge part of the story. I mean, the story really gets going into motion when a hurricane, Hurricane Agatha, I believe, strikes the Outer Banks. Not an uncommon thing that happens actually down there, and knocks out power. So the weather, the seating, the scenery, the setting plays like a heavy role in the story, but the show was not shot in the Outer Banks. It was actually shot mostly in principal photography was actually in Charleston, South Carolina. Now you guys have connections to Charleston, South Carolina. I do not, but I definitely want to hear your guys' take. Kristen, what's your take on shooting in Charleston versus Outer Banks when they're not that far apart from each other?
So we were talking a little bit before we started recording, and we both landed on the fact that as beautiful as North Carolina is, they are more known for the beauty of their mountains, not their beaches, even as nice as the Outer Banks are. But Charleston beaches are really, really pretty, and it's all laid out really nicely. And there's like a lot more rich people in Charleston, South Carolina. And so it's like it was a better place from a plot perspective, I think, to shoot in Charleston. But it just simply does not look like North Carolina, like at all. So it's weird, but I appreciate the aesthetic. More,
okay, but you
guys, I think.
You have to tell me, though, are the people in Charleston referring to themselves as the kooks from the figure eight or the pogues from the cut? Because,
no.
Man, that's like within the first 30 seconds, you get these four terms. And I'm like, whoa, I got to take notes. I got to take notes. What is happening? Who are the kooks? What the fuck is happening?
They're not doing that. And in fact, that was my biggest problem with the show. Every time someone said pogue or kook, I was like, first of all, they sound like slurs. And I couldn't get past that. And then second of all, it was just so weird and zany that I was like, the rest of this is so realistic and like grounded in real life and death stakes. And then you're calling each other pogues and kooks. And I just couldn't get on board with it.
So I think before we even talk more about the filming locations, we should talk about why it's filmed in South Carolina. And I'm not sure if you guys saw this, but the reason they chose to shoot in Charleston is because one of those creators that you mentioned lives in Wilmington and was planning to shoot in the Outer Banks. And then the bathroom bill happened. So that was the reason they decided not to shoot in North Carolina.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, then I'm delighted because North Carolina doesn't deserve this show.
Exactly.
Well, wow. Oh, yeah, I mean, that's for sure. That's interesting because that was actually a real controversial thing a couple years ago that you haven't really heard much about. Now, this show was only greenlit this time last year. I think May 2019 was when the show was greenlit. And that controversy had really passed by then. That being said, it's interesting to see that there are lasting ramifications.
Well, they started shooting in May of last year, but who knows when they were, you know, they were working that out prior, obviously. So it sounded like from one of the articles I read, it sounded like by the time they were going to shoot, that had all been figured out. But in their minds, they were kind of like, nope, we're taking it to South Carolina now. We're done.
I mean, good for them. Without getting into politics, but that's just crazy reason. If you're trying to fill your coffers for your state, what a fucking crazy reason to lose revenue.
People are leaving Georgia for very similar reasons. Because everything was shooting in Georgia for a long time because they had really good tax breaks. Mm-hmm. And then Georgia started being pretty ridiculous. And now everything shoots in Vancouver.
Toronto, too, is really on the rise also as a shooting location. But Vancouver was already a really popular place for television shows. But even the movie industry now is really flooding up there. I mean, when all of Marvel's shit was shooting really in Atlanta. And when they announced that they were going to pull out because of the increasingly oppressive laws down there, I mean, you're going to have Tyler Perry left and no one else. And that's only because motherfucker built so many buildings.
Right.
You know, like he built like Tyler Perry Disney World in Atlanta. I don't think he could move. But yeah, oof, crazy. I want to go back to the kook thing first because I need to demonstrate how exactly old I am. From the second they said the kooks, all I could think of was Ed Kooky Burns and the little jingle, Kooky, Kooky, Lemme Your Comb. Does this ring a bell for anyone? This was a thing that would happen on like Married with Children.
I know the song, but no, I did not think of Ed Burns.
The second, like John B is like, yeah, man, everyone's got two jobs or two houses. We're the kooks over there from the figure eight. And I was like, kooky, kooky, lend me your comb. And I swear to God, I was sitting on my couch. So I am extremely old. I am a 70-year-old man in a 42-year-old body. And I'm just going to be silent now.
It only made me think of the band, the Kooks.
And the Pogues.
And the
right,
Pogues.
Exactly. They're both bands.
I thought of the Pogues band right away. I was like, are they just big fans of it? I don't know. Let's talk about actually the Kooks and the Pogues, because again, almost as much as the scenery and the setting, the kind of socioeconomic divisions also sets the show in motion. At least the first half of the show is very much about the haves and the have-nots, show on BET, that we're not talking about. Kristen, talk about, did that strike you? Was that something that like you kind of like left in an impression? And especially for someone who spent time in Charleston, did that seem like a real thing that happens down there? Are there people with two jobs or two houses? Or is this a little played up for television?
Well, it's obviously a little played up for television. Obviously, there are people in Charleston. There's people everywhere that have two jobs versus two houses. I mean, all over the place. There's rich parts of Orlando. There's rich parts of New York. There's rich parts of Texas. So that part I didn't have a problem really with because that's true always. And their kids will interact, especially if all of the kids go to a public school, which it seemed like all of these kids did. My problem was I have never encountered in my entire life, and I've always been, even like all growing up, we were pretty solid middle class, like not anything to sneeze at, but we weren't like, you know, on the very top echelons or anything. And I have never in my whole life encountered a rich child who acted like any of these people. And it was to the point where like Topper and his friend Kels, I was like angry every time they came on screen because I just was like, I want to kick you in the dick so bad.
Are you telling me that you don't know a lot of Rafes or Toppers in your life? These are not people that you necessarily know.
I mean, I have met kids who have lives like that when I was also in high school, but they didn't act that way. They were nice. I don't know. It was just time they came on, it was like red lights and Kill Bill sirens.
You might have just gotten lucky, Kristen.
I mean, maybe, but I feel like I couldn't have gotten that lucky.
How about you, Danny? You spent some time in Charleston, and how about the way the economic divisions? It was a very black and white, upstairs, downstairs kind of world that the show paints. Even like Pope, whose father is like a restaurateur, is like on the poor side. And it's almost seen like when Sarah goes to, you know, eventually hooks up with John B. And Kiara, who is she's technically a kook, but she identifies as a pogue, is kind of like an outsider. It's almost like slumming it. Was that just passed over, or did you like kind of take a note of it? Like, that's actually some subtle writing there that they're doing on the show.
Oh, I think
not subtle.
Yeah, I think it's pretty average writing, honestly. I think that aspect that you're talking about is kind of like what Kristen was saying, is like there are rich people and poor people. There's division everywhere. To me, all of the things that you're pointing out are kind of like tropes, you know, like we've seen this, that aspect of the story many, many, many times throughout the years. And I do think that this does exist in a lot of cities.
If you're sitting here and you're like, well, were the rich kids the villains and the poor kids the heroes? You're exactly right. I mean, that is definitely how this show is set up. So it is not original there. But who is this show writing for, though? Is this show writing for people in their 30s and their 40s? Or is it writing for the teen set and the 20s set and trying to... Or, you know, we're all watching it because we're all fucking stuck at home. But are we actually the demographic that they're trying to get to watch it? I don't know.
I mean, I don't think we're the demographic at all. And also, I agree that that's a trope and, like, we've seen it. And it's real, the poor kids versus the rich kids. But I think this show took it to 11 in a way that it didn't totally need to. Like, there are no fewer than like 7 instances where Topper and his friends try to actually murder the Pogues.
There is a insane amount of near murder in this show.
So much. And I just was like, I was like, this is so intense. And so every time that happened, those were the moments where I was like, how are they still calling each other kooks and pogues and not like, this is an attempted murderer?
Yeah. I mean, but like, then you have JJ, the pogue, pulling out his gun every goddamn minute, you know, shooting it off his stolen gun. And he's like, pow, 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 at the beach, on a crowded beach. That's how you interfere? Go just jump on the guy's back who's trying to drown your friend. Don't take out a gun and start firing it in air. Are you insane?
Okay. I agree with you, but I also will not hear a word against JJ. I love him. I am in love with JJ.
Wow. Well, guys, no spoilers, but we're playing Fuck, Marry, Kill later, and I feel like we just got a little bit of a spoiler.
So. You got a little bit of a hint. Little bit of a hint.
I don't know. Yeah, so a little tropey. It was a little crazy, but yeah, let's talk about the violence, because Kristen and I were joking on Twitter the other day about how there are no good family relationships in this show anywhere. I mean,
not one.
Everyone on this show, maybe one. I mean, I feel like Pope and his dad, maybe. Like, the dad kind of tolerates it, kind of, right?
Well, okay, you still haven't finished it either? Okay. Put a pin in that.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, okay, even without that, basically everyone in the show is either an orphan, like Lord of the Flies style kind of orphan running around, reckless abandon, mm-hmm. or has some kind of abusive or violent or just absentee kind of parent situation mm-hmm. going on here. Is that a trope? Because or is that, I don't know, because mm-hmm. it was taken, again, kind of like the class division. I feel like the poor family aesthetic here was ramped up to 11 hard.
Yeah.
I think they just really wanted to make it clear that these kids have it bad. That things are hard for them. That's the way I took it. And also, I haven't finished the series, but please don't tell me that Deacon becomes a bad dad. I know he's on the kook side, but I just can't handle it if Deacon turns into a bad guy.
Which one's Deacon?
Oh, that's not really his character. That's Sarah's dad. He's Deacon from Nashville.
Oh, okay, okay.
Oh, I was like, Charles Destin. Yeah, sure.
I was like, his name is Ward.
I think he was, we're going to talk about casting in a second, but I by far, he was the most well-known cast member to me when I went down the cast list.
Oh, definitely,
I was like, sure. Oh my God, I love Nashville. But I wasn't a huge fan of Deacon, though, in Nashville. So there you go. Yeah, I don't know. The family, there is a one scene, and it's a couple episodes in, so I don't want to spoil it, but it involves JJ. It was visceral to me when his father and him have an altercation. Danny, I don't know if you've gotten this far.
I'm not very far past that, but yes, I saw that.
Holy shit. I was like, what am I watching? I don't know that I've ever seen, maybe definitely on broadcast television, I've never seen something so explosive and disturbing as what the father does to him in that car.
Again, am I alone? I felt like they really wanted to make sure we knew that he's got it bad. I mean, the way they shot that scene, it was clear to me that they wanted to make it look like this guy's life is absolutely horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty desensitized to everything, especially violence at this point. I have a very clear understanding of I am watching something fictional, and so I don't jump at a lot of things. But man, that oof, oof, I could see it in my head, and like the blood on the widow. Oh, God.
Yeah. So you asked if that's a trope too, and I mean it is, but usually on a television show like this, especially like a soapy teen drama, there's one character that has it that bad. But they kind of all have it that bad in this, to the point where like there are multiple moments later on, and I won't give, you know, context for why, but there are multiple moments later on in the series where like every single one of their parents is like, you have no idea what's going on, and you can't go out at night, and I don't care what's happened to John B. And like they just, and the kids have to literally be like, no, you don't understand, and I have to go now. And it just is so weird that like these parents wouldn't see the like abject terror on their children's faces and be like, maybe we should get the authorities involved. They just like let it happen, but while also trying to keep control of the children in like the most rigid way possible and failing at all sides of it.
These guys take the Scooby-Doo adventures and put it into like Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
There's a scene, just for the listeners, there's a scene where the kids are on a boat and they are maybe in a place that they shouldn't be. They're looking for something that they shouldn't probably be looking because they're young people and it's really none of their business. And they start getting shot at by like hired assassins. It's insane. Like,
so,
like, I will shoot you, young woman, because you were standing up too high with my high powered rifle. What am I watching? The show really. Woof.
That was one of the first notes I took, actually. And I said, I'm confused as to why this boat started shooting. I think that was poorly written. Because, okay, so the kids are in an area they're not supposed to be. A random boat shows up. The kids start leaving the area, so the random boat starts shooting at them. That made no sense to me. Like, why would the boat shoot at them?
I was not expecting it from Outer Banks, honestly. I mean, I had a general idea. I had read the basic idea of what the show was about. I read the synopsis. But that given, I was not expecting boat chase through fake Outer Banks with high-powered weaponry where children's lives are in danger. I was not on my radar of things I was expecting to see.
And shooting for no reason. Again, that was why I was very confused. There was no setup to that. There was no reason for those two men to suspect those kids of anything. So as soon as the boat started leaving, again, full of kids, they decide, let's shoot at them. That was not well done on the sake of this production of this show.
It lacks subtlety if you were trying to protect an area. Just to begin open firing on a group of children who, man, already have it really tough. They definitely didn't need to have gunfire shot at them. But I gotta tell you, a resilient bunch of kids. I mean, these guys, in just a short course of the episodes, and again, I'm not through the series, but just the episodes I watched, they have had a lot of bad breaks. Things do not go the Pogue's way really ever at all.
You are correct.
Kristen, talk to me about like the kind of random acts of violence. Did you find any of it shocking over like the boat scene we're talking about? Or is it just like, I'm here for the ride. I love it. Let's get a fucking boat chase for no reason.
Well, no. I mean, I think that was weird. I agree. It didn't make a ton of sense. I mean, aside from the fact that like these guys are wearing all black leather in the middle of a summer in North or South Carolina right after a hurricane in which there is no power or air conditioning anywhere, so you can tell they're bad guys. But other than that, no, it was very weird. And I just was like, first of all, they're leaving. Second of all, how do you know anything about what these kids are doing? Which I will admit, it does get explained to an extent later on, because they were targeting the kids on purpose, and you do find out why, but you find out why so late.
So I wanted to talk about casting next, but I feel like you have naturally segued us to something that is really important for anyone who's going to be considering the show, and that's what the point of Love It or Leave It is whether or not someone should watch this show. This show is really two different shows. This show starts off really basically, even with the kind of twist that gets announced is at the end of episode one or two. I don't even remember because I watched them kind of bingey style, where there's a mystery in the show. Even when they introduce the idea of the mystery, this is pretty much a straight teen soap opera drama or teen young or young 20s soap opera drama about, you know, maybe star-crossed lovers, a little bit about them versus us, a little bit about, you know, we're taking it in the teeth constantly, but we keep getting up and we are scrappy and you should like us because of that. And those rich kids are bad. Like a lot of expected things that you get when you put a lot of young people, not a lot of maybe acting experience on their resumes, and you put them in a really high production value show. And then the show changes into something else completely. And I don't know that the back end of the episodes, because again, I'm not through the show, but the back end of the episodes, I think, are very different. Maybe not in dialogue or setting, but in action and tone. I feel like it gets a lot darker and a lot crazier in the second half of the show, where it's almost not recognizable as the show begins.
I definitely agree. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I feel like this is a back-heavy season of television, which usually isn't the case. Usually shows like this are front-loaded and then they take a little dip in the middle because you've done all your establishing and you can do some character work, and then they pick up a little bit again at the end just to like keep you interested for if there's a season two. But
sure.
This show was so chill at the beginning, and we got a lot of character dynamic stuff over at the beginning. And I appreciated that because we really felt how people should be acting with each other. And then it was easier to tell when they were acting out of character with each other. But then this is such a backloaded show. Like starting from, I think, probably episode 6 till the end, which I watched 7 till the end in one shot last night. And I was like, I didn't even want to like stop it to go heat up my dinner. I was like, I have to keep watching it. I have to find out what's going on. And I have to know what happens. And that was in a way that like I watched the first 6 episodes just because I was like not doing anything else on Friday night.
And we said that we were going to talk about it. So you had to definitely watch it.
Yeah, I had to.
Danny and I actually, we did a Love It or Leave It probably over a month ago at this point. And I feel like we had this conversation about how binge TV has really changed how television works, in that you used to have to suck someone in the first episode or two, or you lost them forever and you never got them back. But now I feel, as a reviewer, as someone who talks about TV, especially a lot of pop culture, I feel like a lot of times now I'm saying, oh, you have to give it to episode 4 or 5. That shouldn't be the case, for one thing. But I feel like even in this show, you really have to give it to episode 5 or 6. Where I left off, the show was just kind of getting good. I kind of am starting to resent that, though. Danny, am I alone? Am I crazy? I don't know.
Well, I haven't gotten as far as you guys have. I think I'm right at that pinnacle that y'all are talking about, of it taking a turn. I did enjoy it from the beginning. But I also know that I am a little biased because I really enjoyed the shooting locations in it. And there are things about the casting that I also enjoyed, which we'll talk about soon. So it still worked for me. I even wrote down that from the very end of the first episode, it ended on enough of a mystery for me to keep watching. So yeah, I think I have a different aspect than you guys because I haven't gotten to this turn for the crazy. Turn to the
crazy. All right, but that's still really interesting, though, that you were sucked in enough, though. I mean, obviously, I was. You guys were enthusiastic about this enough that I didn't feel I really needed to watch too much of this. But I only stopped watching it because I ran out of time. But I'm definitely going to finish the series probably tonight because I'm kind of sucked into it now. But I enjoyed it enough, but I don't know that I would have given it a rave if I didn't know maybe also I was going to be talking about this. I don't know that the first couple episodes sucked me in too much. If I had something else better going on, I think I probably would have maybe gone to the other better thing.
I will say that it did. I mean, I do think it's very backloaded, but I was also sucked in immediately. I did like it from the beginning.
Okay, so tell me what sucked you in, though. Was it the story? Was it the location? Was it the little mystery at the end that was introduced? Like, was there one thing that pinged for you?
Not really one thing specifically. I mean, I'm always interested in, like, the next crop of actors that are coming out. So even though these kids are all pretty raw, I really like watching people come into themselves, I guess, as a character specifically. And so that was fun to watch the whole time. But no, I mean, I had heard what the show was about and I had heard a couple people talk, you know, nicely about it. And I was like, you know, I'll give it a go. And by the end of the first episode where they realized, you know, that there's this mysterious, you know, ship full of gold off the coast, I was like, okay. I was like, no, I'm into this. And also it's, you know, it's shot in a beautiful location. It's a bunch of good-looking teens. I don't know. It's got a lot to offer for me.
Yeah, I mean, listen. Location, it really is a beautiful-looking show. Even after it's storm-ravaged, I think it still looks kind of gorgeous. And the way it's shot, you can't fault the production value at all. And the teens, even those bastards, the kooks from the Figure Eight, they're all attractive. The boys, the girls, they are just good-looking. They're straight out of the CW casting hall.
I don't know. I find the kooks repulsive. I don't think any of them are attractive.
Is that because of what's on their inside, though, and not what's on their outside? Rafe is gross. I think Rafe is gross.
Rafe is gross. To the point that, like, I was like 3.5 episodes in, and I was like, I guess this douchebag's a character because he was like nothing in the first two or so episodes, and it wasn't until he actually gets into a couple of altercations that I was like, I guess we're sticking around with him. So I don't like him, and I think Topper looks like if the doll from that movie, The Boy, grew up into a real live human.
So again, it's funny that you get to listen to you guys say this because I do feel the same way I said before that they wanted us to feel this way. Like they picked guys to play the kooks that are really douchey looking.
I mean, they must have.
Oh, they're super douchey looking, but Topper is a pretty boy, though.
No, I think
we all have to agree. You don't think so?
No, oh. He looks douchey. I think that they could have, if they wanted us to have any kind of good feelings for those guys, they would have cast different people. So they specifically wanted us to feel this way. They didn't want us to see any good in them.
Yeah, 100%.
I agree that they were all one pop collar away from douchebag central casting, but I think Topper is a pretty, pretty boy. But yes, all douchebags, and they play him really well. And I want to talk about that because this show is loaded with a very young cast. The adults that are in the show, there are very few significant adults. And the adults are kind of have good resumes. Mm-hmm. But this show is carried on the backs of a cast of actors and actresses that don't have a ton of experience. So let's run down the list and just kind of give general thoughts. So you have your lead as John B. He's played by Chase Stokes. You have Sarah Cameron, played by Madeline Klein. You have Madison Bailey, who plays Kiara or Key. You have Jonathan Davis, who plays Pope. And you have Rudy Pankow, who plays Kristen's boyfriend, JJ.
He is my boyfriend. Watch your mouth.
And again, all very attractive, not douchebaggy at all. They have all the boys, or JJ and John B, all have that, hey man, I just got out of the surf and my hair's ruffled, I'm going to ruffle it some more kind of look about them. You could tell them apart because one has dark hair, one has blonde hair. The girls are very pretty. But I didn't know any of them. I recognized Madison Bailey because she did a stint on Black Lightning. So I knew her a little bit from there. But this was just a black hole for me of who are these people? That being said, I was pretty impressed. I think they did a lot with the dialogue, with the acting. I was really impressed. And I think maybe that's one of the things that kept me going on the show was I found them all very convincing.
Mm-hmm.
Danny, talk to me about the casting and the actors. What did you think of their performances overall?
So I feel the same way that Kristen does about watching young actors. I love watching these actors who don't have a lot on their resume and seeing them come into their own, maybe even throughout the length of a series, which if this gets renewed, I think we will definitely see these actors progress in season two. I'll tell you, though, the one thing that I noticed about John B is I have a feeling he was cast because he carries himself like that character. And so I think with some of these younger ones, that might be the case. They kind of came in to their casting call and they were playing the role exactly like what the casting directors had in mind, because that's how one of the things I noticed about John B is the scene, and I don't want to give any spoilers away, but when he's with Sarah Cameron on the pier after they've taken their little trip to Chapel Hill, quote unquote. And at the end, when they walk away from each other, he has this like very, for lack of a better way of saying it, this like doofy tall, lanky guy walk. His shoulders are kind of down and he's just kind of, but he's not downtrodden, but it just shows that like the guy lacks confidence and that character is at that point. But it really made me feel like, I bet that's how that kid walks in real life right now. He's not even acting yet.
It's very cultish. It's like he had a growth spurt and he doesn't know how to use his limbs yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But I don't think you ever doubt that all of these people look to him as like their ringleader, though.
Oh, no, of course not. He's absolutely the Charles Manson of the group. He is the most charismatic.
Well, he is also the one living alone. So he is acting as an adult. So that makes sense.
Other than JJ, I think these are all pretty mature kids, and I think in a lot of ways JJ had even John B, who is an orphan, I think JJ has the most troubling backstory
for sure.
So I almost
give him a pass for being a little emotionally stunted, a little arrested development. The other three though are pretty high functioning mature adults, more so than a lot older people I know.
I will also give you a little taste that you get some emotional stuff from JJ.
Okay.
It, like, some stuff comes up, some stuff comes out. I really like where everybody ends up.
In terms of adults, the adult casting, obviously we talked about Charles S's, and then also the female sheriff. I thought they were both sheriff. Are they both the female? Because he calls her the sheriff.
She was the sheriff and he was the deputy.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the sheriff Peterkin
is from True Blood.
Yeah, Adina Porter. And she's on lots of seasons of American Horror Story.
Yes, I knew she was on other things, but I always think of her from True Blood. And then, fun fact for you, Kristen, the deputy is married to someone went to high school with you.
Who did?
The deputy guy is married to a girl who graduated from Wando around the same time as you.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
So there you go.
Why are we not talking to Cullen Moss? I feel like we should have him on.
Yeah.
Get Deputy Shoop in here. Let's do this.
Wow. It's probably somebody that I either didn't actually know or didn't keep in touch with. So it would be super awkward.
was she a kook? You could tell us. No one's listening.
I don't know. I don't. Who is she?
Let's not give out names. We can talk about that offline.
She has an IMDb page. She's an actress. She has an IMDb page.
Oh, okay, then it's all fair.
Who is Cullen Moss's wife?
Well, you guys
Bonnie
talk about
Dixon.
Oh, you found her already?
Well, he was previously married to Bonnie Dixon.
Okay, no, the person I'm pretty sure it's who he's married to now. I looked this up.
Madison Moss.
Yes, Madison. And a friend of mine, when she was watching, she's friends with her, so she like tagged her in her story of like, I'm watching your husband on Outer Banks.
So she's exactly my age too. So she like she is less than 1 month older than me, so she would have been in my class. She does not look familiar to me, though. I am gonna actually have to like pull out my yearbooks later now.
Yeah, there you go.
That's hilarious. Love it.
Danny, aren't you kind of curious whether or not Kristen was a pogue or a kook?
We didn't live on the beach, so it's hard to put her in either of those categories.
None of it. Zero. Yeah, I was friends with like the theater kids.
Outer Banks has taught me anything. Everyone can fit into one of these two categories.
Incorrect.
There is no gray. God damn it.
Look, Mike, there were not only 8 children going to that school. There have to be other people that aren't in these two groups.
Well, they don't get any screen time, so. And if it's not in the Outer Banks, I don't even want to know about it. All right, so let's play some games with the Pogues. They all represent different things, right? There's really not a lot of overlap in personality among these guys. So, Danny, if you were a Pogue, which one do you identify the most with, like, personality-wise?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I can identify with any of these Pogues. Honestly, that's not a good question to start with for me, because I don't have an answer for that.
All right. Well, then we'll play. Well, the other game we're going to play is Fuck, Marry, Kill. So you have to pick the Pogues, unless there's really a... You can't kill any of the kooks. All right, so if you want to fuck or marry a kook, you're allowed to use them, but it's too easy to kill them. So try and stick it to the Pogues, or if there is a particular douchebag that really flips your wig, you can use that for them. But give me the old fuck, marry, kill down on the Pogues list.
Okay, first of all, I identify probably most closely with Pope, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, and then secondly, I would fuck John B., I would marry JJ so that I could take care of him because he just needs a hug, I think. And I think I would kill Ki because she's kind of annoying.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting choices. Dandy, do you have a pick on the FMK?
Oh, yeah. Well, my F would be JJ. So you can marry him. It's all good.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I would marry John B. I definitely dig John B. the most. And
wow, you guys kind of swapped. I really like that. You two can get down to some weird shit. Interesting.
And I'm going to kill Pope because I find him annoying. And mostly because he's so, and again, I'm not as far as you guys are in the show, but from where I am now, he kind of seems like he needs to step up. Like, it's kind of like he doesn't like trying to talk them out of things, and he doesn't know if he wants to go, and he's worried about his scholarship. And I mean, I get that in some ways, but in other ways, I'm like, dude, man up. These are your friends.
I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I look forward to that.
I'm not going to play the game. I don't have to because I'm hosting this.
What? But, you said you were okay. Going to.
Let's say. I think it's obvious that I would fuck Yara. So I'm actually going to say I'd fuck JJ too because that would probably be a wild time.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you definitely probably have to go get some medicine afterwards. I think he's leaving you with some recurring gifts from there on, but probably a good time while it's happening. I would marry Kiara because she's kind of rich. You know, she's rich on the DL. And I don't know. I don't find her that annoying. I like her mom sensibility. I think she has a good, you guys are being stupid boys vibe about her. Mm. And I think everyone needs that kind of in their life. I'd probably kill Pope too. Only because I find him very annoying talking about his scholarship all the time. And I get why. You know, like, he needs to get out. He needs to protect it. He's responsible.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this is a fictional game, and I find that annoying. So
wait, I have a question for you guys about John B. So Decider has said that John B. is, like, has a young McConaughey vibe. Did you get that?
I guess now that you say it, but it wasn't like I was watching it going, oh, man, what a young Matthew McConaughey.
I did not get that vibe. And I think it's just because for me, like I said, as an actor, he's coming off as not fully confident in himself.
Yeah, I mean, he's
and McConaughey
16.
Was always confident in himself.
That's accurate, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, JJ and John B together, give me a new century vibe of like Jason Priestley and Luke Perry from early 90210. Not so much in their swagger, but just in like the vibe that they put off together as bros. You
sure,
know?
Yeah.
Their bromance.
The bromance is strong with them. I don't know how I didn't mention this, but because I'm talking about old songs, because I'm an old man, Sloop John B. is a fantastic Beach Boys song that you guys should definitely go listen to if you're not familiar with it.
Okay.
All right. Yeah,
about sailing and being hungover.
That sounds like something John B. could get behind.
Exactly.
going back to the show having kind of two personalities, I wanted to get your take because Rotten Tomatoes, as right before we started recording this, the critics rating was a 72% critics rating with an 89% audience rating. Now, critics are known to be douchebags, for sure. But I also wondered if maybe the audience was vibing on the totality of the season and critics maybe only sampled an episode or two and maybe wrote it off as more of a predictable teen drama than a predictable teen drama plus.
I think that's entirely possible because I know for a fact that a lot of critics get only a handful of episodes and that's all that they watch for review. And sure. It's one of the things that infuriates me the most about people who do television reviews, especially on a show like this, and especially now with so many shows that are really, really encouraged to binge them. I think it is disingenuous and rude to the art to only sample part of it and then be like, well, these first two episodes weren't for me. And it's like, I know that everybody's busy and you have a job to do, but at the same time, do your job. Like, do it in its completion.
Let me ask you about that, though, because there's a great example exists in the Apple TV Plus original series C, the Jason Momoa show. Now, I watched it because I was binging through all of Apple TV Plus's things because, you know, I was covering it and I was talking about it, so I wanted to know what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And it's Momoa, right? It was prestige TV, even if it maybe didn't deserve it. And that was a show that I did not like, but I continued to force myself to watch. But at the end of it, I really did like it. The last couple episodes, kind of like how you binged like three episodes last night of this.
Sure.
There came a time when I started really ramping through the episodes of that show. But I realize I don't know how I feel, and I continue to be conflicted about this. I don't know if that's good TV that you have to get through 4 or 5 episodes. Now, you guys both said from the get-go, the show did enough at the outset to bring you in, and even if you ended up liking the back end more, there was enough at the front end.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, in this binge culture, are you in favor of the idea that liking a show and recommending a show that you have to get through 3 or 4 hours before it really sticks with you?
Yes, because I think that that even exists in network television and has existed forever in television. I think it's certainly the pilot. And then I think I am also really an apologist for a lot of things. So I am really willing to put myself out there, stick my neck out, and stick with a show until it does become appealing to me, and to the point where I will give a show an entire season. And if I don't like it at the end of the season, then I'll quit. So I might be an outlier in this scenario, but I just find it rude to the creators to watch the pilot show, the pilot episode of something, and then not, and then be like, well, this isn't for me, whatever. Because so many people don't understand about the pilot is that it's literally selling the show. Nothing about the pilot is usually like set in stone going forward. And I think it really sometimes takes a long time for casts to settle into themselves and for writers to settle into writing for the characters and stuff. And nothing, with few exceptions, comes out of the gate fully formed in a way that I think you can make your opinion off getting screeners of the first 3 episodes. Like, I don't know. I can't operate that way.
You are a showrunner / creative's like dream.
Yeah, I mean,
upfronts need to be populated with Kristens, but I think you may be an outlier in your average, average viewer.
If she's a dream, I'm a nightmare.
All right, so give it to me, Danny. Give us the straight talk.
I am listening to everything that you're saying, and you're absolutely right. And depending on the aspect of the review, it would be difficult to write the review off of just one episode or even 3 episodes. But as a viewer, you're going to have to get me in that first episode. And when I worked at Fox, even though I wasn't in programming in any way, they have everyone watch the pilots for the season and then fill out a sheet afterwards of what you think about the pilot. And I mean, I am harsh. There were some of those shows 15 minutes in. I was like, I'm done. I'm done with this. So for me, I totally understand the development throughout the season. And I have stuck with shows that didn't hook me right away, but there were still aspects of that show that I knew were good, whether it was the casting or, well, it's written well and I think it's going to get better, or they had a cliffhanger or something. There's at least got to be a certain amount of elements in that first episode to get me to keep watching. And I do not feel bad about not continuing to watch because there are so many things out there. And I don't have time to stick with something that I got an initial feeling is not going to be for me.
Yeah, I think I kind of go that way more, too. I feel like the idea of broadcast television or cable television, weekly television, really still has to get you in the first episode to 3 at the most, because there is so much out there. I feel like binge TV, where this comes up the most often, is a little bit different because I think the people creating it are given different expectations. You know, I almost don't want to fault someone who's designing a show for Netflix or for Amazon, you know, who dropped the whole season at once. I almost feel like it's not their fault if they design a show that has such a slow burn, because they're designing the show knowing that Netflix isn't going to show the credits every episode. It's going to roll right into the next episode. You know, you're going to watch the credits once and then never again for the length of those 10 episodes, probably. And I think that is a different thing. I think that's much more making an 8-hour movie or a 10-hour movie versus a weekly show that has to have the classic beats of a weekly show. I think I'm a little bit more of an apologist when it is a show for Netflix. But this show, well, we're going to get to it in a second. But I think broadcast TV still has to operate a little bit differently because there is just so much, you know, it's, I don't want to be all Beyonce, you know, next, or that wasn't Beyonce. Who did next? Ariana Grande. Like, I don't want to be like, you know, bye boy next, but you just have to be.
That's like four different people.
Yeah, I know. I'm doing an amalgam of things.
You're fine. It's fine.
Ed Cookie Burns never sang a song about bye. So, anyway,
he was only concerned with your comb. That's all he was concerned with.
He was just willing to give you like literally the comb off his head or of his back pocket, really. Kristen, I'm going to send you a video of Ed Cookie Burns doing the song.
I literally can't wait. I didn't realize I was the baby right now.
Have you ever seen, this is a terrible movie, but you know what? Mike's going to appreciate this because I always pull out the most random references. Have you seen the movie Back to the Beach?
I have not.
With Frankie and Annette, because Ed Cookie Burns is in that.
So this is like a, this is all an old like Bikini Beach Bingo, whatever.
Well
Back to the Beach was a reboot, like a, you know, not really a reboot.
Oh,
they like
did one
in the late 80s, early 90s, I think is when.
I think it was early 90s.
Yeah.
It was like peak nostalgia. It was like, you know, it was parents who were hitting their 40s. Or maybe their early 50s at that time.
Gotcha.
Like, remember when you were young and horny, and you would watch Annette Funicello run across a beach in her in her barely two piece bikini?
Yeah, right.
We're giving you that movie, you know. All right, guys, this is my favorite part of the Love It or Leave It. It's the time we go around and we say whether we loved it or leave it. Danny, I want to start with you. Outer Banks, love it or leave it?
Well, I know I'm behind and didn't watch as quickly as you guys, but I'm still loving it. I can't wait to keep watching it. If only for the locations, that would probably have been enough for me on this show. So I was definitely hooked from the jump. And I say keep watching.
All right. Come for the faux Outer Banks. Stay for whatever happens later on in the season. All right. I like it. Kristen, how about you? Love it or leave it?
Yeah, love it. I mean, I have like two caveats, but the one of them was the kooks and pogues. I just can't get behind that. And the other is just that the rich kids are too mean. But other than that, no, love it 100%. I think all the acting's great. I think the locations are beautiful. And I think the mystery at the center of the show is super fun and compelling. So I mean, nothing, it's not breaking any rules and it's not doing anything that you probably can't see coming a mile away, but it's super fun. I really enjoyed binging it.
I'm going to say love it, but with a caveat. If this show came out at any other time in our history, I would not watch this show. I don't identify any longer with the characters that are driving the show forward. That being said, we are in this new world order. There is a lot of free time. This show did not get me on the beginning. I needed 4.5 episodes or so to kind of like, yeah, I'm going to watch the rest of the show. And I know I'm going to enjoy more and more as the show, you know, I watched the last three. It's a binge show and it's meant to be binged and I'm going to watch it in one big sitting and I know I'm going to enjoy it. So love it. But if you have other things that are very high priority for you, watch them first. This is very popcorn-y TV. You don't really need to be paying attention. You can walk in and out of the room and be fine, I think. In this quarantine life, Outer Banks is better than a lot of other stuff that you're going to find. Danny, where can people find you on the internet and interact with you?
You can find me on my website, which is atxgossip.com. Instagram is also atxgossip and Facebook as well. And on Twitter, I am atxgossipdanny.
Kristen, where can people find you or your podcast, So I'm Watching the Show?
We are on Twitter, at So I'm Watching, and Instagram at So I'm Watching This Show. And we also have a website, soimwatching.com, where you can follow along with all of the episodes we're putting out. We are also putting out bonus episodes right now. So we are usually putting stuff on Patreon, but because everything's so bonkers right now, we're just releasing our weekly episodes about the TV show 9-1-1 and the TV show Riverdale for everybody. So you can find those all over the internet and everything links out from the website.
Katie Keene, are you guys still doing the weekly watch-alongs when Katie Keene is new?
Yeah, so we are doing live watches of Katie Keene every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, and that comes on the CW. We're doing it with an app called TV Co. that you can download on your phone. You watch along with us. You can send us little emojis and stuff. It's super cool, and we are really having a good time with it. We're not having a great time with Katie Keene, but we're having a good time with TV Co.
If you're going to spend time with people, Kristen and her partner, Will, are really fun people. Whether or not you're watching Katie Keene, they're a lot of fun to watch a show with in general.
Thank you.
Definitely go check it out. Guys, thank you so much for coming on Love It or Leave It and talking about this crazy new show, Outer Banks.
Yay.
Thanks for having us, bruh.
Definitely, yeah.
Bruh, I gotta go catch that surf, bruh.
Surf's up.
Waves were gnarly, then I'm gonna go look for some gold.
I'm only going Amazing. Surfing if there's a hurricane coming, y'all.
That's the worst time to go surfing. Let's not put that out there. Don't go surfing in a hurricane, please.
That's the only time you get good waves in South Carolina.
That's true. That is
Bruh, what are you even? You're harsh in my buzz. The ocean calls to me. JJ, leave the gun. Bring the board. All right, guys. This has been Love It or Leave It, Outer Banks. I have lost my mind. I need to go finish cooking dinner. Guys, thank you so much. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.